Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mystic Truth Radio. I'm Elaine Reed Cole from Mystic Truth, and today we start a three-part series entitled Alzheimer's, The Caregiver's Journey. So we will be interviewing or talking to four different women who have found themselves in the role of caregiving for someone with degenerative brain disease. And on the third show, myself and co-host Dana Zimmerman will be offering a live Q&A session so that we can hear from the audience out there, and perhaps we can all share tips, suggestions, and just our stories to bring Alzheimer's and brain disease out into the light so we can all try to help each other. So listen, learn, enjoy. Thank you. All right, so we are now joined by someone named Ian. And Ian is going through the process of caregiving for her husband, who they have fairly recently found out that he has Alzheimer's. And so, Ian, can you actually talk a little bit about some of the first signs that actually made you consider, wow, there's something going on with my husband?
Well, basically, 4 years ago, I'd say about 4 years ago, you know, I noticed some differences and just a few things. I actually noticed some kind of a faraway look in his eyes. And we had a couple of incidences where I was traveling and he knew about it, but then I'd leave and he didn't realize I'd gone away or whatever. So we did go to a neurologist, and of course at that point it was diagnosed as dementia, and they put mm-hmm. him on a medication for that that's used for Alzheimer's, Namenda. And, you know, so we've been going like maybe every 6 months for at least 4 years to this doctor. And each time we went, you know, they asked the same questions. And basically I just watched Still Alice, and it was like being in his doctor's office. So, you know, and each time it seemed it was a little more difficult for him to answer the questions. And, you know, it was pretty evident that you could see that there was a change going on. And basically, he is on 16 medicines a day. He has very severe heart issues, diabetes, which he manages with diet and exercise. But uh-huh. you know, the you know, that doesn't help. And so I think until basically March of this year, things were going along fairly smoothly. He'd forget things or ask the same question a lot. But we went to Florida. And the change in routine is not good for someone in his condition and where uh-huh. he had started taking a turn for the worse with his Alzheimer's. When we got back, you know, there were a few incidences down there where he thought we were going home that night. Why weren't we going home? Why were we there? And things like that happened. But when we got home the next day, he came out and he said, "I'm so glad I finally found you." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, I just met you." And he basically had no idea who I was. He thought I was his girlfriend, yeah. which isn't all bad. So I got out our wedding album, and I got out our, we have a photo in our living room of our wedding mm-hmm. picture. He said it wasn't me. That definitely wasn't me. You know, he just said he loved me, but, you know, she was another woman in his life, you know, and she was gone. So
how did you feel about that personally? What did that do to you?
Well, that night I didn't handle it well. Mm-hmm. I kept saying, "What are you talking about?" And it was like 11:30 at night, and I have a neighbor whose husband was the CEO of a company, and he had it for 10 years. And I watched him until she finally had to put him somewhere. I mean, she just couldn't handle it anymore. And I know she's a late riser but stays up half the night, so I called her, and we talked for a long, long time. And, you know, she mentioned to me some really, she gave me some great ideas, and she is available, so I do have her as a resource as well. She said, you can never challenge them because they just don't realize, you know,
right.
that pot's gone. you know, you just have to kind of go with the flow. So basically, most of the time, I really don't know who he thinks I am.
Right.
My daughter was over one day. I've got him into a wonderful program at the Y, which is free with membership, which is the partnership program. And it's run by volunteers, and they do the pool for balance. It's for people with disabilities. They do the cardio, they stretching or whatever. So I've got him in a program there 3 days a week, which he absolutely hates. It's like a total battle to get him there. But when he gets there, he's fine. And, excuse me. So I was sitting with my daughter and him at the table, and he's telling her, he's talking about me, but he's saying, you know, that other one, I don't know why she makes me go to the Y. Really don't know why she makes me go there. I hate it. I can do the stuff at home. There's no reason for me to go there. And I don't know why she puts up with so much from her son. You know, and it's like I'm sitting there, but he doesn't know who I am. So, you know, and the other night we were sitting here, and I've got him doing puzzles, which he seems to enjoy. We've set up a puzzle board, and he's doing those, and I work with those on him. He can play, like, Bo, he plays that really good. And Yahtzee. He had to give up the card games because he was losing money. You know, I realize that. He gave up his license on his own about 4 years ago because he just said he couldn't remember how to get home.
Important.
I've always done most of the driving, but he did that all by himself. So, you know, that was not an issue that I had to deal with.
Yeah.
But we were doing the puzzle the other night, and he says, I don't know what we're going to do. And I said, why? And he said, I don't have any pajamas. And I said, they're in the bedroom, in the bureau. And he said, how can you say that we're not home? So a lot of times he doesn't think
Oh, no. Yes. It's the strangest things, isn't it, that will come up out of their mouth, like, where did that come from?
Yeah, and this
morning kind of like catching flies.
Absolutely. I asked him this morning, I told him I was calling his sister Dolly, because we haven't seen her, and I thought we should plan to, and he said he thought she was his daughter, and he thinks that she's the sister of his children. He really does. He just can't get that straight. But it's, you know, the couple of incidences we had recently were on the 3rd of July, we have the fireworks and a lot going on around where we live. And we have a sick cat. So anyways, I only had to take the cat to the vet for like, I was going to be back in 45 minutes to an hour. And we had taken everything down to our downstairs to have something with our neighbors, and I had all the food down there. I took down his comfortable chair. He knows everybody. He's known him for years because we've lived here so long. And I asked them if they'd mind sitting with him, and I asked him if he would be okay, and he said absolutely. And they called me up panicking because he thought I was gone for days, and I wasn't gone an hour.
Yeah.
And he'll tell people that I go off and leave him. And I went downstairs one day just to our storage area, and I came up and he said, you know, you were gone for hours. I was gone like 10 minutes. So I think the concept of that is a really big issue of him, you know, the time factor, the money factor is, you know, he always liked to have a lot of money in his wallet, and I've literally taking control of that, and I just give him like ones and fives and tens.
Okay.
And because he's lost $100 bills, so I really have to watch that with him. And the other thing is his medications. He's I always kept him in the top drawer. He used to get them out up until a year ago, or up until March, he'd get them out. I have them in the AM and the PM packets. And he would do that, but he wasn't. I knew he couldn't do it anymore, so I started putting them out, the morning ones, and then at night I put out the night ones. But he knew where the drawer was, and I think one time he took them, you know, twice. So I had to hide them. I can't do that anymore.
No.
I've always let him, like, fix my V8 juice and my banana in the morning, but which he's still doing. But, you know, a couple of mornings I've got 3 glasses of V8 juice and a banana and a half, you know. So it's, you know, some things he remembers really well.
Right, right.
But I think the issue I'm really dealing with now is, I guess I'm maybe a private person as well as think I can do everything.
And that is, you know, you mentioned one thing, Ian, and that was that you had this neighbor who's gone through it. Mm-hmm. And from other people that I've spoken to, the camaraderie part of it seems to be something that is really paramount in it. Like, mm-hmm. everybody does think that they can do this alone. And, you know, and that's how it always starts out. So as time goes on, do you find that, you know, like you have this thing at the Y that you're doing, you mm-hmm. did go to that meeting, to have somebody at your back? Because we have to think about you also. So, and that's part of what we want to point out to our audience, is that the caregiver, you know, as strong as you are, and Ian, I know that you're a very strong person, this is a difficult thing. It's very difficult because you don't really know what you're going to get day in, day out.
And now it's at the point where he's always, he likes going in the car with me and just sitting and waiting for me. And he's never been the type to wander off or do anything, but you know, I do have the fear now. Like if I go to Stop and Shop, leave him in the car, you know, that he'll get out of the car. And and you know, he does. The thing I've noticed lately, though, and I'll talk to the doctor about it, is he used to repeat himself over and over and over, which he does. I mean, to the point where it felt like 100 times. Probably wasn't, but it felt like it. And I don't think he's doing that as much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a change that goes with this. As far as hygiene, shaving every day, taking showers, going to the bathroom, everything is fine.
That's
no
good.
Issues. No issues at this point. But he just, I think the doctor was amazed that he progressed so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, he did. I mean, it was slow, and then all of a sudden, so they tried him on another medication, Aricept. Which doesn't, I guess it might slow it down. It doesn't cure it. There's no cure for it. But he couldn't take that. So they just had to take him off of it. The other thing I've noticed, he would never eat unless I give him the food. He just says he's not hungry. But when I put it in front of him, you know, he'll eat whatever's there. But he wouldn't do that. I swear if he was alone, he would starve to death because he would never go get himself something.
He just wouldn't eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I've noticed that big change. That, and I've actually, we've got into the Veterans Administration system for some assistance, and I have, I talked to my daughter today about next Tuesday, her sitting with him. They've given me the names of 2 places around here that have the daycare.
Mm-hmm.
I've been really pushing against that. I just, not knowing how he will react, not wanting to maybe do it because I'm really admitting he's getting worse. And that I think
that's probably a lot of it right there, and that's the struggle.
And that I can't do it. I can't do it all.
Right.
And I think I'm having a hard time with that. So I did. I'm going to call the 2 places and make appointments, and my daughter's going to sit with them next Tuesday so I can just go check them out myself.
Right.
No, but
right. And, well, you know what? That is one thing, too, that we do want to do, you know, tell the audience also, is that do your research. look around. You don't have to grab at the first apple in the batch. You know, you can look around and see what's going to fit your needs at the time. Because one of the things that we really want to stress is that at one point, 1 week, you may be able to handle it. The next week, you may not be able to, and that's okay. It is a progressive disease, and until we actually find the cure, you have to actually know in your heart this is going to shift and change. So it's kind of a matter of...
It doesn't get better.
No, no.
I think he did reach like a week or so, I think he reached a plateau. I think he was he seemed even, nothing new seemed to happen, but then it started going the other way. You know, he's come out with my sneakers on, which is kind of funny because he does have small feet, but my sneakers are really bright pink and all. And then he came out one day with, still putting his bathrobe on, he put my all-weather coat on. We've been spending
That's a look.
Spending a lot of time at our pool here and with our neighbors, which I think is really good for him. And the other thing, he's always been very verbal and a very talkative person, and he isn't anymore. He doesn't talk much. And it's sad because he, you know, he was always so involved in everything.
Now, Dana, because we have you on the line too, is there anything that you'd like to ask Anne as far as, you know, the plight that she is going through?
Hi, Elaine. Yeah, sure. I'm trying to think of any, because I didn't really have anything prepared here. You know, you did mention to her about support groups, but, you know, I was wondering what it was like for Anne, you know, in the house, having any time to maybe just sit and listen to some soft music or a guided meditation or anything to have certain breaks during the day. Is that something that you have a chance to fit in, Anne?
It's not really. You know, he wants me... In fact, I've got so much stuff I need to get done, and he really wants me in the room with him all the time. We stay really active. I have him out all the time, and I'm sure Elaine can relate to that. My grandson had said that I'm like Where's Waldo. He never knows where he's going to find me because, you know, we're someplace all the time, and that helps. I mean, I'm active, so I keep him active, you know, and when he's at the Y, I do Zumba. I want to start doing yoga again. I really miss that, and I think it would be good for me. But I can't leave him. You know, it's my daughter has a full-time job. I don't have a lot of support with people that I can rely on to sit with him. That's, you know, I have a
hearing. So how does he react when you leave him?
Well, the whole point now is that when I go, he starts right away. He's fine with my daughter. But actually, the last time he kept asking her when I'd be back, but he... The minute I leave, he thinks I'm gone for days or hours. You know, it's not like, you know, any panics. And the two things you really want to, you know, help them not do is feel frightened.
Yeah.
And he knows what's going on, and that's really sad because he'll say...
I was going to ask you that. Is he aware of what's happening to him?
Well, yes, and he came from a family of three boys and five girls. One boy died at a young age. But his older brother, his twin older sisters, his other sister have all died with Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. He has two living sisters, one that's down in Duxbury in the Alzheimer's unit that absolutely knows no one, and she's younger than he is. And I would say the youngest one probably is starting to get it, which would mean they all... Oh, the only one that didn't was one of his sisters who died of something else, and I don't think she had any signs of it. She was probably 78. So it's been very prevalent in his family, and the doctors have been interested in that because they've really thought... But they said every day they come out with new strands, too. They don't know, but...
Right.
I guess they are finding that in some cases it is genetic.
Yeah. They mentioned that on that movie Still Alice. You brought that up. And
yes, I watched
Dana
that.
And I have both watched that. And, you know, they pointed out, because, of course, in that movie,
oh, yes,
if nobody has seen that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did the genetic testing.
Yeah.
So,
and it's kind
yeah.
of like I can't really go to the movies with him because, well, he liked Jurassic World.
Mm-hmm.
And we went with Danny, my grandson, to a great-grandson to a movie, and he loved that. It was like a kid's movie. But he gets frustrated if we go to other types of movies. And he really doesn't have interest in TV, which is fine. He likes listening to music.
That's
and,
good.
And he mentioned dancing. It's hard to find a place to go dancing anymore. It really is.
Your living room.
Well, we've done that many times.
Yeah.
And he'll remember the songs. He'll remember, like, first time he danced with me to Anne Murray's, you know, could I have this dance for the rest of my life? And
aww.
He remembers the song when we got married. I mean, he, you know, that stuff is there. But I really like him with him all the time. It's,
yeah.
You know, I need to clean my storage downstairs, but I don't know how I'm going to do it because just actually take him down with a chair and him sit with me, I guess.
Right.
But I guess I haven't wanted to admit that I need some breaks, but I think I do because I'm not sleeping at all.
Yeah. So you are seeing this, and now, you know, it sounds to me, even though you're resistant, but that you really do understand that some daycare is really necessary for your health.
Yeah, and then, of course, my daughter mentioned yesterday, and I'm sure, Elaine, you know the situation of one of her friends' father just died with it, and you know how you have to be prepared, as you said, Elaine, because it can change overnight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So if there was one thing that you could put in place today that would make your life easier that you didn't expect, you know, other than daycare, what is it that, you know, what does Anne need? What do you need?
I think I need to, you know, start taking yoga again because I did it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess the main thing is the breaks or, you know, just having some space and not
yeah.
feeling guilty about it.
How do
you
do that? Oh, bingo. Good girl. Bingo.
You know, I feel guilty.
That's it. Of course, Dana and I are both master coaches and all that, and I'm sure that that was like right on the tips of our tongues, you know, to bring up to you is not feel guilty. You did not create this situation. This is something that came about within your life that, you know, it's part of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of life. And for anybody out there who's going through the same thing, you didn't do anything wrong. If you're the caregiver, you did nothing wrong. This is just something that, okay, now you have to learn to be flexible so that you can get through it the best way that you possibly can.
And I think, you know, I don't think I've created, you know, I don't feel guilty about that. I feel guilty about the fact that I'm thinking I need space.
Yeah, and no, and everybody needs some space. Whether it's a newborn baby or it's a spouse who is sick or a child who is sick or whatever, we all know that you need that me time. You just do. You have to have it.
We're very active in our church, and, you know, people have offered to help, but I really haven't been accepting help.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe my daughter. I just, I'm fine. I can do it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and is that an honest statement?
Well, no, I'm realizing now it's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm definitely realizing it's not true because... And the last thing I want to do is get irritated with him because he can't
right.
help it.
That's you know, right.
He can't help
That's right.
it. And, you know, he just, and he used to like, you know, he used to do it. Well, of course, I worked for a long time after he did. I would love to work. I would love to start, you know, doing something at home Again, I've been looking at things because I think that would kind of help my mind too. You know,
right.
Take it to a different place. And but he just, like, I was trying to actually just do something on the computer this morning, and he kept saying, you know, he kept wanting me to look at something on the TV, and I was trying to do my thing. But if I go in the other room, he'll come in and say, I couldn't find you anywhere. And we're in a condo. We're not in a 4,000-square-foot home.
Right.
You know, so it's, he seems to panic a lot if I'm not around.
It sounds like the things that throw you for a loop, and so obviously you're going to have to get used to being thrown for a loop, is when something different really comes up and just shocks you, like him. Kind of that unexpected reactions or unexpected things, or, you know, I mean, it's not really a big deal when they come out and instead of their bathrobe, there's an all-weather coat on.
Oh,
no, or,
no, that doesn't,
you know,
bother me, of course not.
No, no.
But no, it's the fact that I've heard, you know, talking to different people, like my neighbor's husband, I don't think he I don't think he ever got angry. And, of course, that's the one thing they ask you when you talk to someone. I did talk to a social worker, too. I did a couple of times, and she's available if I want to go back to her. And, you know, and, but I think it's, you know, the things that I have heard, like, how they, and I know of a case years ago of someone I knew that her husband was 50. He was, had a big job in Boston, and he started doing crazy things and getting really nasty. And they thought he was a closet drinker. They thought he was, and it turned out it was Alzheimer's, like at 50. And, he got violent, totally violent.
Yeah.
And, you know, they tell you have to watch for that. I haven't seen that. I mean, he just thinks it's awful if anyone abuses an animal, a woman or a child or whatever. You know, he's very compassionate and sensitive. And he's still got that very, very spiritual and religious. He has an altar on his bureau, and he prays, stands there and prays twice a day.
Mm.
And, you know, he prays that he gets better, you know, because he does know.
So if something comes up, it might be more out of confusion and frustration rather than anger. So it's more agitation.
Yeah, it's agitation, but, you know, I don't like seeing him getting like that either.
No.
It's been two incidences since it was July 3rd and July 4th, and that was that.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the doctor told me to be sure to write those down.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, so it's like one day at a time.
Absolutely. You know. Absolutely. One day at a time. And every single day is a blessing.
It is. I mean, we've had a wonderful, wonderful marriage, as you know, Elaine.
Yes.
And, you know.
Yeah. One day at a time, every day is a blessing. And if there was anything that you could actually say to our audience out there who's going through the exact same thing, what would be your word of advice?
Well, I think a very important thing is, and if you're seeing a doctor, a neurologist, with whomever it is you just cannot challenge them. And that is very difficult because he'll say something that's totally, totally wrong. And if I say it, he gets angry at me at that. Not angry, but
agitated.
Frustrated. And if he, I'm going to cough again. So you try, you know, not to challenge them. And if I say something to him, and, you know, he'll do something. I'll say, well, I just told you that. You know, he'll say, you never told me that. And he really doesn't remember I told him.
Right.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
But he's, but you just have to have a lot of patience. Reach out for help, I think, is a big thing, which I have a hard time with.
Yeah.
But I think I'm learning that.
I was going to say, now that you hear yourself talking and that
is the advice that you would give other people,
yeah,
then maybe
absolutely.
That's it. Reach out.
The other thing that I noticed with him as far as, I think the look in the eyes going back and the gait, the way they walk, I can really see, you know, because the extra problem that my husband has is he's 84 and he looks maybe 60.
Yeah.
And that is very difficult because he looks like a very young man.
Yeah.
No wrinkles. If he gets up and walks, then you realize that, you know, he's got major problems, but he still could be a young man and have that. But he, his gait is, you know, and his balance is not good at all. It's, you know, those are two. I have to watch him all the time. But I noticed those going back when they were saying it was dementia.
Okay.
Those are, because I did say to my daughter and dad, is I just see this, almost like a blurred look in his eyes, like they were blurred, you know. I did know
the kind of wandering within his mind.
Yep, and then, but it's amazing. We had friends over to play cards at Skippo the other night, and he is sharp as a tack on that game. And you know, it's not a difficult game, but you have to think.
So maybe it's not so much day by day as it is moment by moment.
Well, it's like certain parts of the brain that short circuit.
Exactly. Well, they say there's 7 stages,
yeah.
And it's progressive over generally about 10 years.
But you know,
so, and
I brought that up to his neurologist,
mm-hmm.
Asked him what stage he was, and he said he hates that term. He never, ever uses it. He said if he had to use it, he would say that he is a stage 4.
Yeah.
Between 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he said he just really has a problem with the stages. But I know when I've gone on the Alzheimer's website and all, you know, and looked at all
they
that.
Talk about it. You know why? It's because different people will be at different places during the progression.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really kind of hard to generalize with it.
I think
so. It's just kind of an overall, here you go, This is what you can possibly expect.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
You know, he'll get up in the morning. He loves to be out. He doesn't want to be home.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I've created that monster.
I think you have.
Oh, stop it.
I think
you'll
you
say,
have.
What are we doing today? You know, and so today, you know, we take a lot of rides down to the beach in the evening and sit down at the beach. And, you know, and I do get to read them, but he talks to me all the time. So I don't.
Of course.
But then I think if I, you know, and then I feel guilty if I say I'm really trying to read something. Because I think, you know, how much longer am I going to have him talking to me like that?
Exactly. Again.
And I do get the guilt.
And it's moment by moment. Moment by moment, and just
I think we just women are inbred with this guilt complex about life in general. Most of us, we just always seem to figure a way to feel guilty about everything, no matter if it's our fault or not. So I think it's just the way I've always been. So I think I feel very guilty if I'm in a different room and he's looking for me. I feel guilty if I'm trying to watch something on TV or read and he's just talking and talking, like if I say, please, can I just read for a while? Or he's
right.
Out in the balcony and I say, yesterday he kept saying, why don't you come out? Why don't you come out? And I really didn't want to. I wanted to, because I knew he'd keep talking to me and I wanted to do some things. And but he just really needs me with him all the time.
Can you, do you want to address that a little bit, Dana? That whole guilty thing?
Well, just in listening here, I think that, you know, it really is an issue that Anne might want to look into, you know, a little bit deeper. That and the issue of having trouble asking for and receiving help.
Mm-hmm.
I think clearing some of that guilt and being able to receive some help just would really improve her situation. And I think that as a woman, you know, it's understandable that you feel that it's your responsibility to take care of that person, whether it be a husband or child.
Right.
And you know, we often seem to think that we're superwomen and we can do it all alone.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that guilt and that inability to receive help can really, at some point, break us, get us to the point of breaking. Anne mentioned not being able to sleep. So, you know, it sounds to me, and just listening in, that she's close to that point, and she needs to do some of those things, clear some of that guilt, and let other people help.
That's right.
How do you clear the guilt?
Well, if you look at the fact that if you fall apart, so that means your pieces are all over the place, who's going to pick up your pieces?
My poor daughter.
See,
right.
And now do you want to do that?
Absolutely.
So, because I know you would not want to do that, what you have to do is try to keep all your pieces together. So while you're trying to pick up your husband's pieces and your pieces are falling apart, then all of a sudden your daughter is trying to pick up your pieces as you're trying to pick up your husband's pieces. So see this cascade of events that now has been set up. So the only way really that's left for you is to make sure that you have what you need and to not feel guilty about it. You know, it's kind of the airplane's going down and you have to put the oxygen mask on you first,
mm-hmm.
before you can help anybody else.
Right.
And that's really the bottom line of it, is that, Anne, you need your oxygen mask on or else you won't be able to do anything.
I know, but I don't know where to start with that. I mean, I think I started this morning by calling my daughter and seeing if she can be with them next Tuesday so
yes.
that I can go visit those places.
Yeah.
I don't know how to, you know, I pray, I go to church. I mean, I have a strong faith too, but I don't know how to get rid of the guilt. I truly don't. Like, I don't know how to get rid of the guilt if he's in another room and, you know, I feel guilty about it. I feel guilty if I'm not with him every minute.
Right.
I mean, I've got to learn how to deal with that, and I'm not dealing with it well.
Right. Let's try to get rid of some of the mysticism with it and
mm-hmm.
really just get down to some basics. So what I do want to do is thank you so much, Anne, for coming on and sharing with us your story. And, you know, I guess maybe to not feel guilty is maybe the biggest message that you're sending out to people there.
Yeah.
Don't feel guilty.
No.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah. And again, we'll address it during the rest of the show too,
as to
you know, how to be able to just cope with that emotion. It's a hard one, and it's a very emotional journey that you're on. So again, we thank you so very, very much for joining us, and hopefully we can help.
Well, thank you
all
very
right,
much.
So.
Thanks for having
thank
me.
Thank you, Anne.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye. Uh-huh, bye.
All right. So we are here with someone. Her name is Carla. And Carla, you have a bit of experience with actually handling people who have not only brain injuries but also Alzheimer's. So, and just to let the audience know out there, Carla actually is my sister. So some of her story I know pretty well. And how about we actually give people a background about the two women, the sisters, the hidden treasures that you actually worked with for quite some time.
I was actually with them for 3 years. They were delightful. The younger one had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's probably 3 or 4 years before I even met her. And her older sister had never been diagnosed with any kind of dementia or whatever, at least at the time that I started with them. She mm-hmm. was the one who actually kind of looked out for her younger sister. They were
now, you're saying younger and older, but
let's give people an idea of what age we're actually talking
about. Okay, well, we're actually talking, at the time that I started with them, we were talking late 80s and early 90s for the two of them. They were seven years apart.
Yep.
And I believe at, I'm trying to remember back now, a little bit of dementia going on here.
No, no, no. Cancel, play, delete. None of that. None of that.
Yeah, I think the older one was 93 at the time I started with her.
Wow.
And she was delightful. She loved to cook. She just liked having the company. In the beginning, I kind of brought in was brought in on her the case with the two of them when their other caregiver was just automatic, I'm done. She just up and quit, and they needed somebody immediately. So I was brought in, and they didn't really receive me very well at first. And I was... I wasn't so sure the whole thing was going to work out too well. The younger woman was a little bit more sociable, even though she had the Alzheimer's going on. She just enjoyed company. The older one tended to be in charge, you know, and I don't need you. I'm independent. You know, you can come here. You can have lunch with me, which she always made lunch. I wasn't allowed to help with that. I wasn't allowed to do much of anything for her. I just went, had lunch with her, and then she'd send me on my way because they lived in two separate households.
I was just going to ask you, did they live together? But
no.
They didn't.
No, the family had decided that they would probably not get along very well in the same household. They were very different personalities, and you could see when they were together that they there was friction there. The older sister really felt that she knew better, and anytime she didn't seem to really understand the dementia that her sister was dealing with. Even though they were both, the older one was actually a psychiatric nurse. She was a retired psychiatric nurse. But even so, she felt that a lot of her sister's issues were being made up. She was just looking for attention. So there was a little bit of friction there. But as we progressed in our relationship, we spent more time, the three of us, together. And things seemed to work out pretty well, as long as I was there as a buffer.
The younger one, even though she was very, it sounds like she was far more jovial and, you know, easier to get along with, did she actually appreciate the help that you would bring around? Did she let you help, you know?
She let me help with a lot of things. In the beginning, she would constantly ask about the other caregiver that had left. After a little while, we had spent enough afternoons together and just sitting chatting. She kind of eased off a little bit and finally stopped asking about the other girl. And the older one, after, well, she kept telling me she was too old for this nonsense. She was ready to go. She had had enough. And I went, but if you were gone already, then I wouldn't have met you. And she kind of looked at me. And from that point on, our relationship changed. We became more friends, and that was how she started introducing me, was as her friend.
As her friend.
This is my friend, Carla. So
now, even though the younger one was the one that was diagnosed with the Alzheimer's, did it appear, I mean, we're talking about somebody who was in her 90s, was she sharp as a tack, or did it appear that the older one was actually moving into that some herself?
You know, in the beginning, I would say she seemed really with it, and we were really dependent on her being aware of what was going on with her sister so that she could relay things to us. She kind of did a slide. I was probably with them for a year, maybe a year and a half, before I started to notice she's not putting everything together. You know, she's
yeah.
going to make food that's obviously beyond repair, you know, covered in mold, but she's ready to serve it. She later started, it was really probably in the last 6 months or so that I was with her,
mm-hmm.
that she started talking about the people who live downstairs in her home. She didn't have a downstairs to her home. There was a crawl space. And the wine was disappearing, and she would get up during the night, and she would find somebody on the couch in her den and wonder why this guy was in her home. Well, there wasn't anybody. And at this point, I found out, all right, she's dealing with sundowners.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know a lot about. I wasn't really told about the diagnosis until I had discussed it with her daughter several times and brought it up with my boss. And little by little, it was like, okay, she is losing it. There were a few temper tantrums.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, when I went to help her into her car one day, because she finally allowed me to drive her car. Never was anybody allowed to drive her car.
Mm-hmm.
But she was complaining because the car wasn't being driven enough. And I said, well, I'll drive your car. So she said, you would? It was a very old Toyota. I don't remember how old, but it was old. And I said, yeah, we can take it to the store or you know, whatever we had to do, little errands that we had to run. We're going off to the bank. Okay, we'll use your car. We'll go get gas in your car, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There was one day it needed some repairs, and I had to follow her because we had to drop the car off. And I knew at that point that it was not a good idea to allow her behind the wheel of her car because
yeah.
there were many times that she almost drove off the road. You know, she wasn't using signals. She would stop for no reason.
So she
something
was in her,
that we,
what,
we
like
did see
mid,
with
mid-90s maybe at that point?
Well, yeah, because she was already into her 90s when I met her.
When you met her, so yeah.
When I met her, yeah, mid-90s. She was already in her 90s. And I had actually said to her daughter in one of our many phone conversations that I thought it was a little scary. She said, I know. She said, but it's so hard. How do you tell her? Because she was such an independent person. How do you tell her, you can't drive anymore. We have to take the car away from you.
Right.
She knew that it was going to be a major battle, and so she was just like, I don't know.
Because I think that's something that probably a lot of people run into. Now, this is a woman who's in her mid-90s that has not had the formal diagnosis of Alzheimer's, but is, you know, definitely showing that. Like you said, sundowners is, you know,
mm-hmm.
what they came up with. Now, the younger sister, who's in her 80s still, is diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So now you've spent some time with them. What are some of the things that actually started happening with the younger sister that you went, oh, yeah, this is a slippery slope here? So you started telling me a story about her pocketbook.
Oh, my. Yeah, and actually I had been with her for quite a while before the whole pocketbook scenarios, and it happened several times.
Mm-hmm.
She would get nervous. We were always very careful to make sure her garage door was closed because we came in through the garage. I wasn't her only caregiver, so when I say we, that's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't the only caregiver, but we always made sure that when we left at the end of the day, her garage door was closed and her front door was locked.
Yeah.
So she would let us out through the garage and we'd watch her close the door.
Yeah.
So I arrived one day and she couldn't find her pocketbook. And we went to where she normally kept it and it wasn't there. And she totally believed that somebody had stolen it. We searched the house. We looked everywhere. We tore apart her. She had several cedar chests and cabinets and any place that you could possibly think of, we were looking. And I ended up going home later that day. We still had not found it.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, I went back, and there was one place that we had looked, but we didn't look thoroughly enough. It was in her spare bedroom, and there was a little cabinet where she kept, like, gift wrapping and things like that. She had actually tucked it down behind all of that. We had already canceled her credit cards. You know, we had let them know, all right, the pocketbook is missing, her wallet is missing, the bank cards, everything. It was just like, okay, now we get to start all over again. Her checkbook was missing.
Mm-hmm.
We had to start all over again because now we had everything.
Right, right.
But so we found a new place for it, and we figured out a code for her to know, you know, little notes that would give her a clue as to where to look for it in case she forgot. And she was able to find it for a couple of days, but then she changed the spot again.
Uh-huh.
And we went through the same thing. It happened several times, and her sister even came down at one point to help look, and her sister was getting very angry.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing this on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
And obviously she wasn't doing it on purpose, but, and
right.
We had to contact her niece, who was actually her her caregiver, so to speak. Yeah, her, she took care of all the finances.
Okay,
made
yep.
sure the, you know, I mean, we paid some of the bills with her, but, and she wanted to be sure she was in charge. You know, she wanted to be taking care of that. But
sure.
The big stuff her niece took care of.
Sure. Sure.
So we had to notify the niece, and it was just, those were the days that they ended up extending for a few extra hours because we would be putting in that time looking, trying to get things settled, because she would get very upset. And you couldn't
sure.
leave her when she was upset.
Sure.
Or at least
so
I couldn't.
So she had awareness of, you know, things not being quite right in
mm-hmm.
her life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was she totally aware of the fact that she had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, or was that kind of beyond her?
I think it was beyond her. I can remember both sisters talking about their brother-in-law who had been diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, that poor man and their poor sister, what she's going through, trying to take care of him. And it was almost like neither one of them realized, particularly the one that had already been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was like she didn't really realize that this was her diagnosis as well.
Right.
She did get to the point where she did not want to socialize with people that she did not see on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Her sister would decide to have old friends over for lunch and wanted her sister to join her. And she didn't want to go. She didn't want to go to family gatherings because it was too hard for her to remember these people and she didn't know what to say. Once
right.
she was there, she was fine.
Right.
You know, because people would talk to her and would know what to say.
Right.
Actually, the last time I saw her, we're going, it's almost about a year and a half now since I saw her. Her older sister had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at me. I went to the service, and she looked at me, and she, there was like a little hint that she knew she knew me, or knew
but
that
she wasn't sure
should
who
know
you were.
Me.
Yeah.
But she couldn't make the connection right away.
Yeah.
And she yep. told my name. I don't know that she even remembered it during the time that we were together.
Mm-hmm.
But it was pretty funny when we were back at her niece's house. And even though she had a caregiver with her, she started asking me to do this for her. Can you get me that? So it was kind of like she fell back into that old, the old rituals, you know.
Sure.
Can you go
sure.
get me a glass of wine? Can you get me a sandwich?
Oh, she was still drinking, so.
Oh, they both loved their wine, yes. They were both very into the Chardonnay, you know. We couldn't go out to lunch because we did frequently go out for lunch together, the three of us.
Yeah.
But they always had to have a glass of Chardonnay with their lunch.
Wow.
So when we went out, not necessarily when they were at home, but
yeah.
I know when I first started with them, the older one would have buttermilk with her lunch.
Really?
And I went, huh, buttermilk. I wonder if that's the key to stay living into your 90s. But apparently the old age was part of the family. It was just they all lived into their 90s and hundreds. And
wow, the centurions.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, the younger one obviously got moved out of the home that she was in, and was she put within a an institutional-type setting? Or
they were both moved. The older one had fallen and broken her hip, and when she went into the hospital, that was when we saw a serious decline in her mental status.
Yeah.
She got to the point where she did not know her daughter. She started talking about her first husband. Now, her daughter was her stepdaughter. So the second she was the, I think she was like 10 when her dad married this woman. So pretty much she was raised by this lady. And she was the one who was always around for her. She lived a good distance from her, but she would try to get down as frequently as possible. She'd be in touch by phone. But by the time she ended up in the hospital, it got so she really didn't know anybody. She didn't even really – she would ask for her sister at first, and then it got to the point where she wasn't even asking for her sister. And she was pretty much living back in the days when she was married to the first husband. When she was finally released from rehab – now, when she was first in rehab, I took the younger sister to visit her, and she was coming back from therapy, and she saw me down the hall, and she yelled to me, "Hi, Carla." But the next time I saw her was the day she was being released from rehab, and she didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
And that was only a few weeks later.
Yeah. So she had a very quick descent.
She went downhill really fast mentally.
Really fast.
She lasted another year. They moved both ladies to an assisted living. And she lasted another year in assisted living. Now, another concern with having someone with any form of dementia that has an animal, do they remember to feed the animal?
Right.
Certainly
them,
with the younger sister, we were constantly making sure that we fed the dog when we were there because there was never any, you know, she would think she had fed the dog when she hadn't, or she'll put down food and say, he's not eating. Well, no, because we already fed him an hour ago.
Right.
So she wouldn't remember whether she had or she hadn't. Whereas the other one was really good about feeding her dog. But then I think it got to the point where she was feeding whatever happened to be there because they were really good about not feeding dog food but feeding people food.
Oh, yeah, that's not good for them either.
No.
And plus, she's the same one that you said she would pull the moldy food out of the refrigerator and be ready to serve it. So, you know, yeah, that's a tough thing. Now, Carla, those are the women that you took care of. However, that kind of set you up for what was to come in the future. So what other exposure did you actually have to somebody with, you know, the dementia / Alzheimer's / sundowners?
Well, actually, prior to taking care of them, I dealt with our dad. Which is one of the reasons why I decided to go into being a senior caregiver, because I discovered how really difficult it was for the family to take care of somebody like that, like, around the clock.
Right.
And especially if holding a job.
Right.
I knew how hard it could be, how draining it could be. The fact that I had that experience with Dad, who really, Dad was also very much like the older sister, independent, didn't like to be told what to do, you know, wanted to be able to do everything on his own.
Yep.
He was one of the first things that we had noticed with him was the driving.
Yep.
And him getting lost, going to places that he had been to many, many times.
Right.
The driving along and then just stopping, like in the middle of the street for no reason, no signal, just stopping. Or driving along and looking out the side window and still driving forward.
Yeah.
It
was
very
all scary. And now part of the scary part with that, too, is that, you know, he wanted to continue to drive because as one of his second jobs and stuff, he was a professional driver.
Right.
So he drove big buses, P&B bus line. You know, he actually did some limo work, too. So, you know, he was very used to being behind the wheel. And then, yeah, to watch that, watch him, you know, do a course that he had done for years and then just be lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was some of the first
signs. He used
signs.
To drive himself to my daughter's salon all the time, and it was a very direct route from his house.
Right.
But he ended up down the Cape one day when he was supposed to be going to the salon.
Yeah.
Him being in Hanson, the salon in Plymouth, and he ended up down the Cape.
That's right.
He made a wrong turn somewhere and eventually found his way home again, but never called to say he wasn't coming. We didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened more than once, so that's when he just stopped going. She started going to his house to cut his hair.
Exactly. Now, what would you say were some of the next indications? Because, you know, we couldn't even really go by his disposition, which is one of the things that, you know, comes up in Alzheimer's, because, you know what, he wasn't the happiest man ever. So, you know, we couldn't even go with that, because a lot of times they have, you know, this emotional adjustment that, you know, so they can kind of easily explode. So, you know, I was around, but I don't even know when we all just kind of looked and went, oh, there's something a whole lot more going on here.
I would say that the first time I really noticed that we really needed to be right in there hands-on was Thanksgiving before he died. And I noticed he was a bag of bones. The way he dressed, you couldn't always tell.
Right.
But when I went to give him a hug hello, I was like, oh, this, I'm going to break this man in half.
Yeah.
His clothes hid the fact that he had lost so much weight.
Yeah.
So we started out with just phone calls to check up on him. And then I would go visit him and be sitting with him for lunch. And he would double over in pain. I'd be like, are you all right? His stomach hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he ended up being admitted to the hospital, and they felt that he was dehydrated, and it actually was not the family that got him in there. Luckily, his priest was the one who got involved and got him admitted. But they determined that he was just dehydrated, and once they got liquids into him intravenously and whatnot, he was released within a couple of days with the idea that he would have follow-up with his doctor. He didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
At first they said somebody should be with him at all times. Well, that didn't work out very well, so we started the dropping in.
Right.
Let's set up a schedule.
Yeah.
People drop in, you know, or give a call, or it had to be a daily phone call at least.
Right.
Then he took a fall. Well, actually, no, it was before the fall that we had to spend more and more time. He got so he would not go out of the house.
Right.
He wouldn't even
didn't
go out
really
on his
want
back
to get
deck
or anything.
No,
I remember that.
No,
really quick.
I can remember going out to eat with him on a pretty regular basis, and he got to the point where it was like whatever I was ordering is what he would get.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know what he wanted.
Right.
And he wouldn't even really look at the menu. It would be like, what are you having? Oh, I think I'll have this. Okay, I'll have that too.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah. And he wouldn't eat it. He'd have a few bites of it. Then he went, well, he ended up back in the hospital again after we had been spending 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with somebody there. There was always at least one person there, round the clock.
Yep.
He got, so he would have a couple bites of a meal or a few sips of something to drink.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd be running for the bathroom. Then it got so he wasn't strong enough to get up off the couch to get to the bathroom.
Right.
And needed help to get up.
Right.
So when the overnight started, it got to the point where it was every 20 minutes he was getting
up. Mm-hmm.
And many times he would be yelling for help. So then it was two people had to spend the night because otherwise nobody got any sleep.
That's right.
He certainly didn't.
Right.
And with everybody starting to get sick, that was when we finally had to make the move to have him back in the hospital, different hospital this time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we finally found out how sick he really was.
Correct.
Whether his dementia, which the dementia
was
had
related.
Actually been, I mean, a lot of it was actually there years before. Years.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and it was not diagnosed. So.
It was not diagnosed.
Uh-huh.
It was that constant repetition of stories, and we just go, oh, here we go again.
Correct.
But he was still functional. He was still certainly able to, he did his own laundry. Once Mom was gone, he did his own laundry. He did his own grocery shopping, went to church every week. You know, he did his usual routine stuff.
He had his routine.
Yeah.
You couldn't
and
take
he
him
followed
out of
the
his
routine.
Routine.
Routine is huge for somebody with dementia.
Absolutely.
Huge.
I'm glad you said
you
that.
You change anything with them, and it throws them completely off.
That's right.
One little thing, and they, you know, let's stack the dishwasher a little bit differently. No, you can't do that.
That's right.
Let's go to a different grocery store. Nope, that's not going to happen.
That's right.
They have to the same routine over and over again.
Now, with our father, we didn't actually see him pass with Alzheimer's because it was actually, he was diagnosed with colon cancer, and
right.
it was inoperable. So with that, it was kind of a blessing that, you know, although he suffered terribly, pain-wise and all that, but it was inoperable, and that is what he, you know, eventually perished from. Not a happy person. He was not happy in the facility because he did wind up being, you know, institutionalized. And I know you went there, like, every day, pretty much.
Every day.
Every day. Every day.
That's why he was so put in so close to where I was.
Yeah. And that absolutely helped, but it was hard to watch. Sometimes it was hard to have pity on him because he was a tough guy. He was just a tough guy. And now you look back and you go, well, was some of that from the Alzheimer's? And that it
very
just
possibly.
Wasn't diagnosed. And very possibly.
And we don't know if that was the only cancer that he had. Did that cancer
Correct.
Start elsewhere?
Correct.
And metastasized to the colon. I don't
Correct.
Know. I don't know if there was a cancer of the brain. I mean, we never went beyond that initial diagnosis, which happened because of his weight loss and the fact that he couldn't eat.
Right.
You know, we
Right.
needed to find out about that. And it was like, we can't treat him. We can't do anything to help him if we don't know what's causing all of this.
Right. So it actually got to a point, and this is one thing that I want to stress with the audience that is listening, is that we're talking to you, Carla, and, you know, you every single day, you know, there was 24/7. What does that do to your life?
It becomes your life. It
Exactly.
becomes your life. He was living in a different town.
Yeah.
I had, luckily my kids were grown. I was lucky in that I didn't have the three generations to be dealing with.
Right.
Because my kids were adults. But I did have a husband at home who had recovered somewhat and was independent, but he had had a stroke.
Okay, that's the next step that I want to get into here. Because not only have you dealt, you know, you dealt with our dad with Alzheimer's, you also dealt with, you know, the sisters who, you know, whatever the oldest sister's diagnosis was, there was, you know, brain damage there. You know, she was almost, you know, 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, definite diagnosis. But then there is also your husband who has had severe brain trauma. So tell us a little bit about that and what the comparison is between all of these people.
Hmm. Well, a lot of what I've seen with all four of them was the mood swings, the temper tantrums, mostly due to frustration on losing their independence. The confusion, and that's another thing that really frustrates them, is when they don't, whether it's they're looking for a word or looking for an object, or they could swear they just did something and that's not the case anymore.
Right.
They were wrong. But they don't want to admit that.
Correct.
So
correct.
There are, if you didn't know the diagnosis with each of them, you might think that it was the same diagnosis for all.
Right. Right. And the whole thing is, too, is that we're talking about a huge age span. So it's not like, you know, we're just talking about people that are, you know, in their 80s and 90s. You know, Paul is still, your husband is still, you know, he's in his 60s.
No,
and
Paul is 63 and had his first stroke 13 years ago. So he started with the strokes young. He's now had four.
Yep.
Two of them not as bad as the other two, but certainly each one has left him with a deficit of some sort. I think probably with this one, he's more frustrated than he has been with the others.
Sure.
The first one, he took it that he'd be able to get better, just like he had after his heart attack. He could get better. He would, you know, it would take time, but therapy and whatever, he would get better. And he did get better, never completely, but he did get back to doing things he wanted to, just never got back to work.
Right.
It did leave him with some verbal issues, but not so much the memory. This one has hurt the memory. And
now I would say that the bigger difference between the two, okay, so, you know, because everything that we're talking about is dealing with the brain, no matter what the diagnosis is. With your husband, there is still the possibility of regaining some function, as where with a lot of Alzheimer's or sundowners or dementia, as to date, the medical establishment doesn't give you hope. So, and I think that the big thing from different people that I've talked to who have been caregivers in positions like what you're in is that they carry with themselves guilt. Guilt of, you know, can't I do more? Am I doing enough? Am I, you know, God, I am resenting this person. You know, it's just the thoughts that run through your head. Would you say that some of that you feel the same way? Like, you know, God, please forgive me for, you know, having these thoughts today.
Sure. You get hit with exhaustion. Especially if there's no help, if you're on your own, You mm-hmm. have nobody else that's really there to, I mean, call in services. Even if you've got somebody who can come in, say, 3 times a week for 4 hours.
Yep.
It's still mainly your issue. You know, there's the doctor appointments, and there's keeping track of meds, and there's, you know, the everyday type things that you would normally do with your, you know, taking care of your husband and whatever the needs are, laundry, grocery shopping, whatever.
Right.
But then there's that added thing. It's almost like taking care of a child.
An infant, yeah.
You have the things that you need to pack up to bring along so that you make sure that that person has everything that they need if you're away from home.
Right.
Sometimes there is resentment, and it's like,
mm-hmm.
darn it, you know, why couldn't you have done what you were supposed to when you were supposed to? Or, you know, but mostly it's exhaustion.
Exactly.
It's very draining. It can be very depressing.
Mm-hmm.
You get to the point where it can be overwhelming.
Yep.
And then you just kind of take the time and say, okay, well, this is better, and this is okay. Let's look at the good things, because if you forget about those good things, then you're lost.
That's right.
You know, not everything is bad.
Right.
So we have a roof over our head, and we can pay our bills, and those things are important, you know, even though I've got a full-time job that doesn't pay, there's no
right.
paycheck there.
Right, right. And that's kind of what it boils down to. It's a full-time job. You know, there are some rewards to it, no matter, you know, who you're taking care of. There are some rewards because it's time spent, and you know that eventually that time, it won't be there. So, you know, you look at it that way, too. I think that what I'm hearing from different people, really the only way to approach circumstances like this is to have people, like the role that you played at the very beginning with the, well, not at the beginning, but what we just talked about with the older
women. Ladies.
You need the caregivers in there.
Mm-hmm.
You need somebody who gives you a break. You know, you need to still maintain yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just simple things, you know, depending upon where they're at, enough time to actually, you know, sleep and to take a shower and,
right.
like you had said, to go out to the supermarket and, you know, things like that. To be able to actually go out for a walk, and it's a real walk, not a crawl, because
mm-hmm.
you know we know that when somebody goes through this, their gait in walking changes. You know, it becomes
right.
more of a shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
So you know your walks are out. So you lose your independence, and again, you know, they don't like to get out of their routine. So. You're housebound for a lot
Pretty
of
much.
It, you know. A lot of it can be that way. And again, they might be mobile. You might be able to take them out. But they pay the price when you take them out, when you expose them to different things that are not part of their routine. And sometimes they appreciate that, and sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what you're going to get. So, Carla,
and it can be exhausting for them because their brain can't process everything that's happening around them.
That's right.
You know, at a group gathering, going to a party, a family party,
right.
and
right.
there are so many conversations going on, you can't really focus on anything.
Right.
There's too many things happening at one time, and it gets too confusing.
Right, it's a buzzed in their
Which
head.
Is, I think, is certainly true of my husband, also of the younger sister and her avoiding a lot of gatherings with her family.
That's right.
You know, not wanting to go to a cookout that her niece was having in the next town over because she didn't want to be around that many people.
That's right.
She fought them one time. Wanted to stay home, and I said, okay, fine, I'll stay with her. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But her older sister was upset that she wouldn't go because everybody wanted to see her. But
right.
sometimes it's not what they want and it's not what they need.
Exactly.
Also, another thing with when caregivers are being hired to go in,
mm-hmm.
it's real important, and I saw it with these ladies, consistency. After I had been with them for a while, when I started, there were two of us, and we covered everything that was needed. But as time went on, it was getting more and more difficult for the two of us to handle the hours that were needed.
Mm-hmm.
I had been taking care of my father-in-law as well, and there were times when I couldn't go and I needed to, and I asked the other girl to cover and she couldn't. So they'd have to bring in somebody else. And it got to the point where there were so many different caregivers and nobody else was staying. So they'd be there a few times, and then they'd be gone, and somebody else would be there. And as their dementia was progressing, it was more and more difficult for them to have somebody that they didn't know.
That's right.
So it got to the point where I was the only one that they knew, because the other girl that had been there from the beginning, from when I started, she ended up leaving too many other family commitments and whatever, and everybody else who was coming in to relieve me, it just got to be too much.
Right.
And, of course, while the older one was in the hospital, that was one thing I had left out earlier, while the older one was in the hospital, the younger one totally lost what was going on. She didn't know where she was. She would wake up in the night and think she was in a hotel.
Yeah.
The heat would be, let's see, it was September. The heat would be on and it would be too hot or it would be too cold or whatever. And she didn't know what to do about it. So she'd be calling 911 looking to have it fixed.
Yeah.
And so it got so that the police had been there, and it got to the point where they said she needs 24-hour care. She cannot be left alone.
That's right.
And
so
at the
for
time
people
that they,
to understand that that is the progression of it, is that, you know, you can't do it all yourself. And in this case, it was a hired hand, but sometimes you have to shift and change and put it so that they are actually in a facility,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, the care is there 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Right.
Yeah.
And so even when they both ladies went to an assisted living, but it turned out that after the older one was released from rehab, she was in a separate apartment from her sister for a little bit, but she never really got to a point where she could be alone. And they ended up putting her in a special wing.
Yeah.
And eventually it got to the point where she didn't ask for her sister and her sister didn't ask for her. The only way they would see each other would be if the niece was there. And she did try to go once or twice a week. And they did have special caregivers come in strictly for them.
Yeah.
You know, hired separately from the institution they were in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, not everybody can afford that.
No.
So, Carla, I would say from a lot of this, because this is like a ton of information for people, is that really the bottom line is that when you are faced with somebody in situations like this that you've been exposed to, is that you can't have enough help. More help, better. Less help.
Very true.
More stress. So more help. And for the caregivers, that means opening up to receiving. You know, somebody offers, take up on it. You know, and I think that that's the only way for self-preservation. So I want to thank you for coming on. This was very informative. Hopefully
helpful
for people. Yeah, well, I think, again, we have to talk about it more and more. People are being faced with this more and more. So, again, I want to thank you. And, you know, let's listen to the rest of the show. And, you know, hopefully we can help a lot of people with this. So thank you, Carla.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. We'll talk later.
All right.
And this is Elaine Reed Cole for Mystic Truth Radio. Thank you for tuning in to this segment of Alzheimer's, The Caregiver's Journey. We will continue this discussion next week. In the meantime, you can reach myself or Dana Zimmerman through our website, www.mystictruth.net. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Mystic Truth Radio. And until then, let's keep talking about it.